Mouth.
Word of 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 mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. From revelations of NSA surveillance to the Heartbleed virus to the use of Google Glass in public spaces, personal privacy is one of the evolving quandaries of the digital age. While protecting our privacy is not always an option, we do have two choices when it comes to using social media. Quit or leave a self-revealing data trail. Christian Payne has chosen the latter in a big way. Originally a professional photographer, Christian's bread and butter was selling photographs to the UK dailies, which sent him to Iraq, Pakistan, and other newsworthy places. Then came the digital revolution, and with it, higher quality amateur cameras at a much cheaper price. While the prospects for professional photographers diminished, Christian Payne's took off. He joins us now to explain how. Christian Payne, great to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me.
So how would you like to be identified? I mean, what's your title now?
I've got different titles depending on who wants to work with me.
Okay, well, say I want to have an interview with you.
I'm a blogger.
You're a blogger?
Yeah.
You used to be called a photographer, though. You worked in Iraq, among other places. When did that shift?
When I realized that there was this perpetual wave of disruption hitting pretty much every industry, and if I didn't evolve into at least doing multimedia, for example, taking audio and putting those with photos, meant that I could create really interesting multimedia stories. That put me kind of head and shoulders ahead of the photographers around me.
Right. I guess a lot of them were probably running scared because they're no longer getting paid, or people can get photographs online for free.
People are scared of their business model being threatened, and with photographers, it was as if every photograph had to be sold. Well, I made more money out of doing stuff off the back of sharing images. Every image I shared was a calling card for myself. For example, by putting my photographs online on Flickr or another photo sharing website, people were like, what are you doing? People are going to steal those. And I'm like, fine. The tools are here now for me to find those that have stolen the images. And I don't invoice them for usage if they're a newspaper. If they're a blogger and they've linked to me, fine. I use Creative Commons licensing quite a lot. If they're a newspaper and they've taken my image, I'll invoice them for theft, and it's worth a lot more to me.
Now, wait, you've got this little, what is it called? You've got a narrative clip that you're wearing on your plaid shirt.
There's
what
a few different cameras around right now, and I'm experimenting with this one. This is one of the many wearable technology devices that are out there, and this enables you to take photographs without thinking about taking photographs. And there's a scary side to this, and there's actually quite a beautiful side to this. Every 30 seconds, this is taking an image, and I won't see that image until later on tonight when I plug this into my computer and it downloads and then uploads, and then I can see those images on my phone. This isn't for the images I want to take. This is for the moments of the day that I would love to have taken an image. And I'm kind of gifted an image by this device. It's very strange. I've only learned this recently. I didn't get it until I found a couple of beautiful images from moments in the day where I was doing something. And all of that moment came rushing back to me.
I'm not very good at math, but every 30 seconds, a lot of images in a given day.
It cleverly kind of curates the images, and it will say, this is the condensed version of images which we think have nice photos in and faces, and if you click a button, it will show you the 100, 200, 300 images. I don't have it on all day. If I take it off right now and put it face down on the table, it switches off.
Mm-hmm. I looked up the narrative clip, right, and the tagline is remember every moment. And I wonder, should we remember every moment, Christian? I mean, what does continuous documentation add to or even detract from an experience?
Of course, there's a danger in us archiving absolutely everything and then sticking it on servers which we now know all too well are not secure.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to do this responsibly. I'm not asking for permission for anybody as I walk around with this. When I accidentally forget to take it off going through customs, I'm breaking a law. These are some of the instances that I want to be aware of, because this for me is an experimentation right now. I am not your normal kind of user of this, because I want to document the world around me. I want to understand how my behavior is changing and those around me, because we are entering quite an exciting new time. This kind of device is no different to the Google Glass, which everybody
right.
is excited or freaked out about. And in a few years' time, we'll be having contact lenses that will do the same.
Mm-hmm. In a way, you know, we go through a world where we are being monitored quite a bit, and suddenly you're turning the table and kind of monitoring the world.
There's something called surveillance, watching the watchers. And for a while now, every year I'll get together with a group of friends at George Orwell's grave in Sutton Courtenay in Oxfordshire, and we will talk about civil liberties, and we'll talk about what privacy means today. This year was very exciting with a lot of the Snowden revelations. And for many times now, we will share images of CCTV and surveillance devices as people capturing and witnessing, saying, we know you're there, we can see you watching, just to let you know that we know. Because we do switch off to this.
So when you share those images, what is your kind of goal in putting those images on display for other people to see?
There's a side effect to sharing anything online. For me, when you share multimedia in online spaces, I aim and I hope that some of those will trigger thoughts the same way an artist might do it. I would never call myself an artist. But ultimately, the conversations I have from the small things that occur on the internet can lead to huge revelations, great new network connections. So for me, there is a value in sharing, and you never quite know what it's going to be. You know, what is the return on investment of me being in social media? I hear all the time, and I'll say, what's the return on investment of that conversation you had down the pub where you learned something you couldn't have learned anywhere else?
Yeah, but you're pointing to something that it was a mystery to me reading about this clip, that conversation that you're having down at the pub becomes a moment in time, becomes something etched in your own memory. Does it become something else if you then go through the photographs of it and see it, you know, as captured by the camera on your chest?
Memories are never the truth of what's happened because we remember them through filters anyway. If you go and revisit places from your childhood, I guarantee they're going to be different to how you have remembered them because there is a distortion field the moment we try to remember anything. If nothing else, looking at a photograph taken in that time, when we get the ability, because at the moment we don't, to trawl through tens of thousands of images to bring out those moments, you'll suddenly realise that, wow, the door was on the left of that window, not on the right. How weird my mind is.
We're speaking with Christian Payne. He's a blogger. He's on Twitter at Documentally, where you can see some of his work. So a lot of people who are concerned about the privacy of their data, there's an urge to contract. There's an urge to not share data or just be a lot more careful about it. Others are proposing that we should level the playing field. We should try and own that data and use it for our own means. How do we manage that wish to share and understand and the other wish to protect?
You can control your data flow and you can learn about how to share sensibly or ethically. You can't control the way people feel about what you are sharing, but by, in my case, I believe sharing curated content that I want to be out there does create my kind of image of how people think of me. And yes, it's very similar to the actual person I am. So I almost give up things as I let go of them, because as much as I would love to control the data that is captured and taken from my feeds and used to sell things back to me, it's pretty fruitless, really, let's face it. I mean, we sign up to these free, in inverted commas, social media sites when we know they're not free at all. We are ultimately the product which is being sold to others, and then we are being sold back to.
I had a conversation with Sherry Turkle. Do you know who she is? She's at MIT. She was a very early proponent of internet culture, I guess, in the late 90s and early 2000s. And she wrote a book called Alone Together. One of the things that really stuck with me is she said that we are creating devices now that give us the illusion of companionship without the demands of friendship. And I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that as somebody who functions and connects with so many different people in this social media space.
I think the same arguments and discussion came about when the telephone came about. For me, when I speak to my grandmother on the phone, who doesn't really use any social media apart from her Twitter account when I'm sat with her.
What's her handle?
Granumentally. So when I spoke to my grandmother on the telephone, she wasn't in an alternate reality or in a separate place. The phone was just between me and her. I wasn't getting her body language. I wasn't getting anything other than her intonation, the sound of her voice. That was enough for me to know it was my grandmother and still feel the same love. Yes, if you are only ever speaking to people in 140 characters of text, you are going to miss out on a relationship, the same as if you use an email or anything else. I, working from my shed in a small village in England, meet more people in, whether you want to call it meet space or away from keyboard, than I ever would do if I wasn't plugged into these networks. Mm. So for me, there is no tool more social that actually gets me into the same room as other people.
You were speaking all last week to students at SNHU about social media, about connection, probably about advice to where they are going or what you would recommend. Want to share any of those with us?
I would have been terrified way back, because back when I was at school, you knew exactly what you were going to do, and that might well be a job for life. Things are so different now. The importance is in being agile. It's in having more than one revenue stream, potentially, more than one skill set. For my personal story, I talk, I teach, and I document. If I didn't have those three strings to my bow, I don't think I'd be able to earn a living. And being agile and being able to switch between those or replace them when need be hopefully makes me sustainable and future-proof. That's what people need to be thinking about now. I couldn't do any of that without a network of people. I recommended they start right now and they follow people smarter, better, faster, quicker, and more connected to themselves. We're not working alone anymore. We're not eating alone anymore. We're not walking alone anymore. When you have access to thousands of people, potentially millions, through a device that sits in your back pocket.
Christian Payne, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You can join the tens of thousands of followers of Christian Payne at Documentally on Twitter. We have a link to that and more on the narrative clip camera. All of that is at wordofmouthradio.org.